Hello, and welcome to episode 445 of the Crate and Crowbar, being recorded on Friday the 11th of April. Today we're going to be talking about a bunch of open world games, and joining me today to discuss these is a mountain that you can see and then walk to, Marsh Davis.
Hello!
And a distant blip on the UI which turns out to be some crafting materials, Tom Senior.
The best crafting materials.
Absolutely.
Legendary.
Legendary crafting materials. Purple. Absolutely. How are we doing, lads? Are we all right?
Yeah. Things are swell all over, I would say.
Absolutely.
The weather here is gorgeous for a change in England, so I've been greatly enjoying the onset of spring, and I've been enjoying some good video games as well.
I went for a run this morning, which you should not be impressed by, because it's the first time I've done that in, I would say, comfortably 12 years. And it was the NHS Couch to 5K app, where you can... So it's a game, basically. I'm not going to be one of those podcasts who just talks about my life like some sort of fucking comedian who's had a baby. But they do give you a very basic game to play, in terms of you can choose the voice, and then they're going to tell you what to do. It doesn't really respond to anything you do. It just assumes you're following their instructions. But I was quite enjoying... Is it the writer... He wrote a book called, like, What I Talk About When I Talk About Running. Was it Haruki Murakami, the Japanese writer? And he's this guy who, like, runs in silence, right? Doesn't have a podcast on, doesn't have any music on or anything like that. And I was enjoying running in silence today. I'm thinking maybe I could really be, like, a really pretentious runner. Maybe if I keep this up, I feel like that would be the reward. Not the weight loss or the lower blood pressure, but just being able to lord it over everyone by being like, yeah, I just run around Walton on Thames to the sound of birdsong and the wind.
It's a very noble motivation.
I really want to be smug runner.
I think the way Murakami runs is while sipping a single malt whiskey and listening to Bob Dylan, and then talking about, like, crafting long sentences about Bob Dylan endlessly as he lives his life out of his car, as he does in many of his books. Because he's the most sort of self-insert writer, I think. He just puts himself in his books all the time, as much as I enjoy them.
He must be very sad then, because, boy, those are some rough times to be had in one of those books.
Sad but cool.
Speaking of sad but cool, at least two of us, I believe, have been playing the latest in the Assassin's Credulous saga. Marsh?
I have.
How have you been finding it?
I have enjoyed at least 10 of the 40 hours of it that I've played.
Wow. I'm impressed you got past those first 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is going to be a fun podcast, because I think we've had alternating experiences of the two games we played. But this is a new Assassin's Creed game set in 16th century Japan. It follows the exploits of a shinobi by the name of Naoe, the pronunciation of which is correct, definitely, and a samurai by the name of Yasuke, who team up on a quest for revenge. But I think it's the best Assassin's Creed game that's been in a while, partly because those first 10 hours, which I alluded, offer quite a controlled and paced experience, and it's top-loaded with quite a lot of lovingly crafted narrative beats and you know, cinematics and stuff. And but even within that, it does let you roam the open world, but it doesn't overwhelm you with all the kind of objectives and piffling distractions. And I think maybe none of that stuff really matters as much to me as the fact that this is, like, one of the most unreasonably gorgeous open worlds I've played since, like, Red Dead Redemption 2, I'd say. And so much so that I just can't bring myself to fast travel through it. And I think that's, like, there's a real kind of threshold of, like, bucolic credibility that gets me when, like, I'm encouraged to role play being a traveler. Like, I won't cut through swampy fields to get to where I want to go. I don't like running in towns, because that feels like it's breaking some sort of immersion canon. And just the world is just so beautifully rendered, and all the seasons are stunningly captured. Seasons play like not a interesting mechanical role in the game, but like a significant way of creating visual identity for the game. And just every time there's a new weather event, I just have to pause and enjoy it. That's just how nicely kind of rendered it all is.
The best breezes I've ever known in a video game.
Like, yeah, you could gusts.
Gusts and breezes. They don't even, they're like subtle, right? They don't need to even go hard on these things. Like, they don't need a storm, don't need a gale. That's obvious. That's like, we were into that years ago, right? This is like new shit where you could be walking down a watery path and it's a blustery day and all the leaves and shit are moving in unison to the wind and there's stuff swirling around in the air and the sunlight's pushing through the branches and god damn it, it's gorgeous. It's just so beautiful. Yeah, really stunning, I thought.
But it hasn't matched up to that in other respects in your playthrough, Jamie?
I probably need to go back to it because I did what I often do with these games, which is I really wanted to push through whatever the big town moment is. And I knew that there would be a moment where Yasuke would eventually turn up in the plot again. I don't think that's a spoiler to say, because he turns up at the beginning, you do some high-octane killing with him, and then he fucks off for 12 hours while you play as Naoe. So I wanted to get to that bit, and as I understood it, like, once he turns up again, that's when the game goes, go and do Assassin's Creed shit, you're off the slightly on rails section. And I really wanted to try and engage with what happened after that, the next 30 hours, which is what you're supposed to do. And I just dropped off it. I just stopped playing it. And I wish I hadn't have done. But those games sometimes they make it quite tricky not to, I think. By dint of their colossal size, how they choose to structure that size around you, and how they choose to structure the story that kind of delivers you to the point where it wants you to just go off and do Assassin's Creed stuff. I feel that that can actually be quite a rickety structure, for me at least, because I like the characters, I like the story, I like the acting. I'm playing on immersion mode, where everything's in Japanese and Portuguese, and I think that's great. I have no idea what the English language version is like, but the actors in the original language are great. And just across the board, the performances are excellent. Characters genuinely excellent as well, particularly the two leads. And there's lots of interesting stuff happening all over the place. It's just, this is the first Assassin's Creed game I think I've played since Odyssey, the one with Cassandra. Right. I've dabbled around with some other ones a little bit, but this is the first one I've played since then. And it's certainly one that's drawn me into its story and drawn me into its world. But yeah, that size, set against the backdrop of the story it wants to tell you, is just it's just out of sync a little bit between what it wants to say and what you're actually doing, I think. And it's not full-blown ludonarrative dissonance. Like, I'm not complaining about the kind of the people you're mowing down or anything like that. It's more just like the scale of it is just very hard to visualize, even though the game gives you many ways to visualize the scale of it. It still feels like a small story lost in this kind of ocean of stuff going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I wish it was just a small story to some extent. I'm grateful that there's not that much. Oh, what's the name of that really dopey guy in the first game? Is it Norbert? Something like that?
Yeah,
whatever.
About right.
Like the modern Desmond. Day. Desmond, Norbert, Desmond, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's always like a Norbert tax to pay in these games, right? And this has, like, you have to pay the least amount of Norbert tax in any Assassin's Creed game I've played in order to just get to the thing that you care about, which is, you know, historical fantasy Japan. And so it's nice just that it sort of short circuits that and gives you quite a lot of meat on that in Japan straight away. It does focus mostly on Naoe's story initially, and it is a sort of formulaic revenge story, but I think it's quite literate in the cinema of that nature and the way that intersects with the Western. There's lots of kind of musical hat tips to the Western as well. But like, Yasuke is just this super interesting historical figure, and his origins are just immediately so exciting that it's sort of a shame that it sidelines him for so long. I mean, I understand why they do that, because they're dealing with quite a lot of stuff that would be quite difficult for it to interleave the story of these two characters. Because I actually think the initial structure is quite successful, where you are pursuing Naoe's revenge in the present, but also periodically you hit these sort of nodes which then give you flashbacks into the events that led up to the opening scene of the game. And I think that did actually work pretty well for me. And I think it does a lot to kind of set up that small story, or rather the central story of the kind of like ring of evildoers who you need to assassinate in turn. I think it does a good job of like making all of those stabbings very memorable and characterful. And, you know, there's a great bit where you are taking part in a tea ceremony and you are trying to figure out which of your fellow tea drinkers is your assassination target. And like mechanically, there's very little to it, but it's a much more kind of enticing premise to that assassination than I've seen in these games before. They try and vary it a little bit more than in past games. But then like you hit this point in like 12 hours in when the game does that big town moment, as you're saying, and it opens up to the full ass bloat that is available to you. And it's not like all of the work up until that point is undone, but it feels like it just gets increasingly dilute the more you go into the game. And like, you know, like I said, you know, you've got, as in Odyssey, actually, you have that circle of masked evildoers who you must identify and kill. But then as you get further and further through the game, like, I think that's a very kind of like alluring setup, right? I mean, it works well with the geographic space and it helps you differentiate your targets and makes everything very kind of lurid and characterful. But then the game expands and it just keeps on giving you these new rings of masked samurai to murder. It's like, now you must murder these 9 masked samurai, but first you must murder these 9 masked samurai, but first you must murder these. And it just goes on and on and on. And every additional ring, it just means that the first ring, your very motivating quest, becomes less and less meaningful. It just becomes like one odd job among many. And then you you end up with the kind of classic situation of these sorts of ASCII games where you just feel like you're mopping up icons on a map. Mm. But the interesting thing is, like at about, I don't know, 16 hours in or something, I checked my achievements and I just got one. And the number of people who had also got that achievement 16 hours in, maybe, I don't know, a sixth of the way through the game at that point, was only 20%.
Yeah.
So, like, who are they building the rest of this game for? Like, who is actually... I mean, I'm sure there are maniacs out there who are going to absolutely get everything and tick everything off, be completely completionist about it. But do they matter? Like, why not build a smaller game that more people can appreciate that doesn't undo all of the kind of dramatic intentions that you have?
That's what they did, though, with the last game, isn't it? With the one which was, I'm sorry, I completely tuned it out of my existence.
Mirage.
That's what they tried to do with Mirage, right? Is they tried to do a, and everyone hated it for being too small and,
oh, really?
And too insular. I think so, yeah. I'm sure I can be corrected on that one. But it is interesting with Shadows because it's like you can't really fault it in many ways. Like moment to moment, it's great. Like murdering a camp full of people is good fun. Whoever you're playing as, you can smash through the walls and stab people through the face if you're playing the big guy, or you can sneak around and haul people into the grass if you're playing the other one. It's fun. And there's been some lovely little emergent scenarios I had in there. So one of the, like the castles, like they will have a number of samurai in them that you need to kill, and then you get to open the big box at the top of the tower and that's got some goodies in it. And I just had a fucking great time. I spent like a whole long play session starting at the top of a tower and working my way down through a bunch of rooms with sliding doors and just murdering every single person I saw there one after another. And it was a brilliant, faintly emergent bit of like action stealth gameplay, which I just had the time of my life playing. Like so many little puzzles of how I could get through a certain way without being seen, or where I could escape to if I was, and then starting off in these enclosed spaces, and then occasionally a guy with a big sword would stumble into the room and be like, what the hell are you doing here? And that would be like a big angry fight, and then I'd jump out the window, and all this sort of stuff going on, these kind of rolling battles that give you opportunities to hide and recover and come back, and all this stuff just feels so good, I think. And even the little encounters that you find on the road, it's to your point about the rings of samurai that you need to get, where like I was murdering one of those samurais and then two of the other samurais would just happen to be walking past and they were like, hey, He's in our ring of Mark Samurai. Stop that. And then I had to fight them as well and kill them too. So there's loads of lovely little bits and bobs going on in there, really. So it is interesting that the issue it has is of scale, but it has to be big and there has to be huge amounts of stuff to do. Otherwise, I guess they don't feel like it's an Assassin's Creed game, really.
Is it not more that it has to be a Ubisoft game? Because increasingly, when I play these games, I just see the Ubisoft template. I was playing the Avatar game on something of Pandora or whatever it's called. And it's just mechanically, they're all so similar that it just feels as though you're playing a game wearing a different suit often. And then, but the actual fundamental rhythm of the games are identical. And you're always climbing a tower to find a cool box at the top. And there's all that bloat and fluff that they feel like they have to put in to give value, but they don't seem to they can't discover a different formula that doesn't rely on those crutches. And maybe that's what you're feeling like. It sounds like an amazing setting, though. Like, I want to play it just to look around.
Yeah, there's sort of, convergent evolution or whatever it's called, where, you know, with like the carcinization, where everything is destined to become a crab. Like, all games are ultimately going to end with you diving off a tower into a hay bale whilst an eagle screeches near you. That does seem like there's a lot of shared technology, I imagine, in Ubisoft, and that encourages the games to share a similar template. But also, I mean, like, there are things which are just undeniably satisfying in all of those games, like Far Cry with its outposts. That's, I think that's, you know, informed other games in Ubisoft's stable. So you're definitely right there that there Ubisoft has this formula. I would say that up until that 12-hour moment, though, that this game feels very, very much its own thing. It feels like it's pursuing its own ideas. It's definitely the most, it's resistant to a lot of the things that I feel drag down other Assassin's Creed games, whilst also borrowing enough of those mechanics and feeling like those systems have reached a level of maturity and robustness that it all feels very solid. It's notable there isn't any humor really in the game. Which I think is, like, I saw somebody online saying, oh, if only we had, like, you know, another comedy Socrates character to waddle in and fart. And just like, oh, God, that'd be the worst thing. I think it's like, this is the most most controlled Assassin's Creed game, in that it's very focused on the kind of story it wants it to tell and doesn't veer off that into, you know, comedy side quests.
I did have one laugh out loud moment while I was playing it, which was in that early scenario, in that early kind of 12 hours, where someone was telling a sob story about their golden idol or whatever that had been stolen from their tribe and was really important to them and was getting quite sniffy about it. And it just so happened that I had been to that camp on the way to see him and had stolen it already. And they properly give now a legitimate, you mean this golden idol? Like that. And you see the guy deflate. It's really good that you see the guy go, oh, yeah, that. Thanks. Like, he completely caught off guard by the fact you already had it. And it was a solid laugh. There's also a laugh if you fast travel to one of the haystack jumps as Yusuke.
Oh, and you duff.
And right. You dive off and he goes, ah, and cracks his back on the grass. Great.
Not as easy as it looks, he says.
He's got a few lines, actually. There's a few things he says. There's another one where he just goes, I'm fine.
Yeah, I think that's within the kind of thresholds that I'm talking about of the fiction. It feels like it's flexible enough to contain that, but it wouldn't be flexible enough to contain like a full-on comedy Leonardo da Vinci.
They're always in the shadow of Cassandra as well, right? Because she was such a great character. She had a kind of a playful aspect. She's sexy and fun and cheeky. All these kind of funny words that normally you don't give to video game protagonists, and she just made her wildly entertaining to play. And no one here has a kind of character quirk. Everyone's just quite serious and everyone's quite focused on what it is they need to do. And there's not enough kicking people off cliffs into the Mediterranean. That's one thing that's an issue here. Although the kick is pretty good. Yuzuka's kick is pretty badass, actually. It does send people tumbling into piles of boxes and stuff.
He has, I don't know if you've picked up all the weapons at the point where you quit the game, but he has some absolutely disgusting, disgustingly violent things he can do to people. I'm genuinely shocked. And, like, you know, having played video games for most of my life, it's very rare that I'm shocked by violence in a video game. But I was like, wow,
Yeah.
Wow, that really was unnecessary. Did you need to remove all of the limbs before the decapitation occurred?
Absolutely. He was already dead 3 limbs ago.
Yeah.
I love that, I have to say. That was a really nice little gift the game gives you. Yeah, equip this ridiculous Klingon-looking axe thing and start ripping heads, guys.
I have to say, though, like, Assassin's Creed parkour, I don't get it, and I don't think I've ever got it. But what's weird is I think I might not get it in a different way to the way that I didn't get it in the past.
So it's just the mystical way of the assassin, Marsh. It's the Knights Templar. They unlock the gift of just running in one direction and scrambling over things and hopping from beam to beam. What is there to understand?
You do hop to beam until you leap sideways left and perch on a log and refuse to get off that log, no matter how many times you're shot or what buttons you're pressing. I think Tom, you might remember this better than me, but like I distinctly remember when the first Assassin's Creed was demoed at Future Publishing that it had a really complicated control setup. Like I remember the people demoing it getting pretty shitty with the journalists because they didn't understand how the parkour worked because there were too many buttons to press. And obviously now, like, it's been paired back to press a button and go in and forward, and then you do parkour. But was it always like that? Was it released in that state, or has it evolved to that point?
It definitely was simplified by launch. It was pretty much... It wasn't a one-button system initially. You had to press the jump button, I think, to actually hop between things. So there was a degree of Crash Bandicoot-style reactive jumping. But since then, it's just become that one-button push forward and you go up any surface. And it sounds like it should give you a great sense of freedom, but actually it's irritating to climb upwards in Assassin's Creed because you just go much slower. So it's like you're pressing a button to do something that's supposed to be very cool, but actually is annoyingly slow. And it can't be any other way because it would just be superhuman and look stupid to go much faster. But I could see that it's just kind of friction of the environment that doesn't really contribute to the stealth or the fantasy of being an assassin in this amazing place. My ability to access rooftops is not really a core part of any gaming fantasy or historical fantasy that I'm really interested in. Though it did give rise to one of the funniest kind of tooltips ever in any game in the first Assassin's Creed, which was ladders are the socially acceptable way to access rooftops. which is just priceless. I think about it every time I climb a building in Assassin's Creed. It's the socially acceptable way to access the top of the Vatican.
We have strayed too far from the light of God with our ridiculous stairs and elevators and lifts.
The rooftops do get their revenge in this one, because I think there's something about the geometry of the beautiful Japanese gabled roofs which the parkour engine just cannot deal with. Like it loves the apex of a roof. I will just climb up there and then will insistently walk along the apex rather than go over the roof as you intend. In fact, I would say like a good 30% of the time it does not interpret what I want. What do I want the character to do correctly? We're always clinging to the wrong thing, trying to throw yourself out the window, and they'll mantle onto some roof beam instead. It's
any slope that gets gradually more acute, as in those rooftops of a Japanese palace of that time, it's just I don't think any motion system in any game has ever been able to handle that. In terms of like where the feet go, where the character like is supposed to go, I can imagine that being like that. But it was like one of the most beautiful Assassin's Creed games was set in Paris. I can't remember what it was called. Unity, that's what it's called. And it was like really buggy, and I reviewed it and couldn't get a good score because it was just a mess at launch. But that had a huge problem with just hopping onto a piece of rubble and poising there as though you're on top of a 200 foot tall building. And then you just stick there and you stuck to this little piece of rubble while the French Revolution is happening around you. And I'm like, I need to move. And yeah, it's been a problem in the series forever. And
it's funny that they still have I don't mind the Animus stuff in this game. I have no idea what the Animus stuff, I have no idea if Danny Wallace figures into this or if his character's died or if his character has been absorbed into the Animus and is now a kind of Danny Wallace god across all of the digital domain. No idea.
Ugh.
But I But I quite like the kind of glitchy anima stuff they do in this game, where it's like corrupted presence. This samurai is really hard because he's made of animus,
yeah,
or whatever. I literally have no idea what the animus is or what it's doing or why it's still included or, to be honest, what any of the lore of the game is. I know that there is a creed of assassins and it is about stabbing people with small swords. I would say it's to this game's credit that it's entertaining and fun and the story is engaging, even though there is literally like sci-fi stuff going on that if you haven't played another one of those games, you'd have no idea what it meant. But still, the game still is engaging and fun despite that. I would say it's to their credit that this series has been going for so long, there's been so many entries, that I know it's had its moments of staleness, but it does still feel like pretty fresh in lots of ways, even despite the kind of Ubisoft-iness of it. And maybe it's just because I've been away for a while from these games. But I do think, yeah, it doesn't quite feel, and it's almost become cliche to malign the kind of the Ubisoft game, but it does seem like they are, and for good reason, but I do think it does seem like they are trying. They're trying to pivot on that axis just a little bit, especially with this game. They made that game called, I can't remember the name of it because it was a ridiculous title, but it was the one that was like Breath of the Wild, but with Greek gods. It might have been called Immortals Phoenix Rising or something like that.
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
Did I get the title right first time? Yeah. And that kind of stuff. I don't know. I think there's still a lot of creativity there. And I think Assassin's Creed Shadows, its only issues really are of scale. And games are very expensive. This game is 55, 60 quid. That is a lot of money in these days. Games are about to get even more expensive, it seems. And like, it's good value for money. Like, you could just play that game a lot for a long time and get your money's worth on it. And I do actually think that does count for a lot. It really does. And I think there is a way of looking at these things, which is, fuck's sake, why are there 20 different samurai I need to kill for this particular chain? But there's also a way of looking at it, thinking, we want to give people a real playground, a real kind of place that they can exist in. And because God knows the real world's fucked. It's like, there's something in there as well. Despite the fact that I fell off after the somewhat on rails section, like, I do feel like there is a... And this game has generated a lot of goodwill, actually, in ways that like a lot of their recent games haven't. Mm. The last Far Cry was just met with a shrug. And the last Assassin's Creed was shrugged as well. So I think it's good to see that there's still creativity there. And obviously, like, the ability for new ideas to flow into the space.
I think it's really cool just to have a really big budget, lavish single-player game to sink your teeth into. And also the commitment to the historical setting. Even though these are like often very silly games, they do love history. And they like in terms of the art, in terms of how the environments are built, in terms of mythology when it comes to Cassandra's story and stuff like that, it's really cool to have something served up every year or two where you can like, just really enjoy that. And there are the codex entries and all of the kind of research that's gone into the game is there as well, which is what I really enjoyed about the smaller Assassin's Creed set in Baghdad. I've already forgotten what it was called. But
we can't remember it. We can't keep it in our heads.
No.
Mirage.
Mirage. Yes, Mirage.
It was my turn to remember it. You can get it next time.
But that was so cool. Like the city of two rings, there's the inner city and the outer city and the way that it was laid out. And even just small things like there's the dyeing district where they dye clothes and make clothes and all the dyers flowed into the streams. So this is beautiful multicolored oil rolling past you as you're like free running around. But that stuff, there aren't many series that will do that, be inspiring and get me excited about history and make me want to read more stuff about it. And I think that's a great thing about Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, and like you could go to one of those big tall towers that they love to have in those games and you can climb at it and it does the thing where the eagle squawks and the camera revolves around. And there is some really awe-inspiring sights in that moment, and for the first time in a while that sense, that cliche of I can pick out that point on the map over there that I can see in the distance and then I can go and have a look at it, and like it's just, we're so used to it, but this is one of the games in recent time that's made that feel once again slightly miraculous. A kind of crazy thing that you can do is to look at something from a long way away and then go and look at it right up close and open a chest and for there to be a +1 sword in there that you can that you can immediately junk and steal the cosmetics from. Shall we talk about Atomfall?
Go for it.
Atomfall. So Atomfall came out at the end of March. It is by Rebellion, best known for Hitlerian bollock-popping shooting gun Nazi game, the Sniper Elite series, which I have a fondness for. I thought the last one, Sniper Elite 5, I thought was very good. This is a departure for them. It is a game set in the late 50s in Cumbria, the Lake District. And it is a kind of... It's funny, I've read and heard a couple of reviews of this game where people have said, don't think of this as an open world game. This is not an open world game. What this game is like five large areas that are connected. It's like, it's an open world game. Like, it doesn't matter that there's some loading screens between them. Like, it's an open world game. It feels like one. It looks like one. You play it like one. It is a little open world game set in the Lake District, which is the place, by the way, that I grew up. And so it's a nice nostalgia vibe for me, even though they are doing more of the interior Lake District, which is very beautiful and picturesque, rather than the coast of Cumbria, which is where that power station that actually did almost do a bit of a blow up in the 50s was. This game basically takes that event as a... And that area, by the way, is just beautifully windswept and fucked. There's a writer called, I think he's called Andrew Michael Hurley, who wrote that book, The Loney. Really good horror book. And he makes great use of that kind of side of the country, where the country's very thin. It's quite close to the northeast of the country. So the dialects and the accents really weird. It's a mixture of northwest and northeast. Yeah, Geordie in there. Really beautiful part of the country that has all these weird like traditions. Like, you should look up Westmoreland wrestling, which is just like they wear these crazy outfits. Completely mental part of the world and fascinating. This game doesn't explore that stuff enough, really. It's just Lake District, and there's a few very good northwestern accents in there, but not quite enough of local colour. This game takes place, as I say, after a kind of nuclear incident, which has made everything go all Stalker / Chernobyl / anything where a unholy thing has been uncovered in the earth, and now the area is in quarantine. You play as an unnamed amnesiac who wakes up. A guy has given you a key. He said, take this key, and you can use it to escape. And then pretty quickly you are set off into the world of this game. And in feel, the game is a kind of open world exploration type thing. I think the game it's probably closest to is something like Fallout New Vegas. What you end up doing in the game is following clues that you find, either in notes or in things that you hear or things that you can see on the horizon. And then you follow these things and you get a clue to another thing, and then you follow that thing, and then there'll be something at the end of that trail. I love this game. I was really, really surprised how much this game has really taken me under its spell. Because there is so much it does, which is, on the face of it, quite undercooked seeming. It doesn't really excel at any one thing. If I was to slag this game off, I would say that the characters you meet are too thin, that the shooting isn't fun, that the stealth mechanics are vague, and there's enemies seeing you from a million miles away and then losing. Just some of the stupidest enemies I've ever encountered in this game. The sort of enemies who all, nine of them will climb down a ladder in turn and just let you shot them and shoot them in the head one by one. It's got crafting in it, which is never my favourite thing. Its skill system is undercooked. The actual way that the quests themselves articulate, it's like we are in a post The Witcher 3 world, and I expect my quests in a RPG story type game to have some level of twist and surprise in them. And if they don't have that, it's just, what are we doing here? We're still in the least interesting quests in Oblivion kind of era. What else don't I like? Like, it's, there's so much, there's so much it does. The world is very beautifully drawn, but there isn't the kind of depth of something that we experience with something like Baldur's Gate 3. Is a kind of cruel thing to compare things to, but Baldur's Gate 3 does exist, and that is a game that has something down every nook and cranny, and every character has something to say and stuff like that. Obviously, this is a smaller studio working with a smaller budget and doing something really different. All that slag off is really just meant to put in perspective that actually the game is a work of some brilliance, because all of that stuff, which is stuff that ordinarily would bother me, would annoy me, is actually about making the scale of this game manageable, graspable, and fun to engage in. So the gameplay loop of this game, it's very like Stalker, actually, the original Stalker games, in that you're setting off on these journeys based on rumours that you've surmised. You literally have to look at map grid references at points in this, which I find a lot of fun. Like, they'll say it's, you need to find this box at sort of grid coordinate, whatever, and you have to actually look on your map and put a little marker down. And essentially you're crisscrossing between these different areas of the world, hunting down clues, doing fetch quests, finding out what's suspicious about whoever, and then just murdering pretty much everyone you come into contact with, because everyone hates you on sight, apart from in very specific areas. You're looking generally for the entrance to something called the Interchange, which is this underground area which kind of gives the game its focus. You'll get in there at some point, because the game is very meandering in terms of what order you do things in, and it's very free in that way. There's all sorts of ways that you can clearly come at this stuff. And then when you get into the Interchange, that is where all the plot of the game lives and where all the characters congregate, and that's where you'll find your way to escape, which is ultimately your goal in this game. And the thing that makes it brilliant is the quest design system, because it encourages a level of exploration and player choice in terms of what you want to do on a given kind of trip that I just think is glorious. And it's just kept me playing. It's kept me playing for 10 hours, right? Which is nothing in the Assassin's Creed Shadows of things, right? But in this game, I've enjoyed every single moment of it, because there is just the right amount of stuff to do. There's just the right amount of people to talk to. There is enough intrigue in the world to make me want to find out what's going on, to press into the lore. And there's enough level of challenge and scarcity in terms of your guns and ammo and all your sort of stuff that you need to go on this adventure, that I just feel really contained in terms of playing it. And that quest system, which does allow you to basically come at things from a whole different bunch of angles, and doesn't even do that thing of a Baldur's Gate or even like a Fallout New Vegas, where they will necessarily be some clever line of dialogue to acknowledge that you've done an interesting thing, right? Doesn't even do that. It just means that your journey through this game is entirely self-determined, and that just feels glorious. And it's so clever in how it funnels you through, quite literally, this Interchange thing, which is where all the plot kind of crisscrosses, and that's got new doors that you open up, which will allow you to investigate further or bring another character back into the kind of play. And as the game unfolds, there are basically four or five kind of characters that you will be pushed into the orbit of, who represent different ideas about what they should do about this horrendous thing that's happening. And I haven't completed this game yet, but I'm in the kind of end game of it, where you get to choose which one of them you align with and what you choose to do. But the deepening of the world, the deepening of the lore, and I don't think this game would work without the Interchange, because the Interchange gives you this kind of crazy science lab hall of nightmares that you can constantly return to and delve deeper into. And yeah, I'm just entranced by it. I'm so like happy that games like this are still being made, because it feels unusual, creative. It's constrained in some ways creatively, but it's also like full of ideas in terms of its how it executes things in lots of different directions at once. And yeah, even though there are lots of ways that you could criticize it for, I actually really admire it as an exercise in scope and quest design to actually give you a genuine sense of adventure and a genuine sense of immersion in something, which is relatively small and discreet, but actually, for me, much more digestible. Even though this is a game rife with cliche and influences from other games and doing things that other games have done less well, I feel like they've really clicked onto how to make a player's journey feel unique to them, and to urge people to explore and seek out the kind of secrets of this world in ways which don't feel like just like ticking things off a list in an Ubisoft way. I go on these quests to meet that cult leader and steal her stupid idol because I want to. I want to find out what she's like and what their weird camp looks like, and that burning Wicker Man. There's literally burning Wicker Man in this game. What the hell's going on with that? But yeah, I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed it. I thought it was going to be a game I played for a couple of hours and okay, I get it, I'm done. But actually, it's really drawn me in. It's the best thing I've played so far this year, I think.
Wow. I'm surprised by how much you've enjoyed it as well.
Yeah.
Having said that, I don't hate it or anything. But I did have much more of a problem with the large list of flaws that you listed at the beginning. I mean, particularly just like moment to moment, I found it very unenjoyable to fight or hide in the game. And unfortunately, those are the two things that you do for large parts of the game. Like you say, the stealth system's just non-existent, really.
Grass and you can hide in it.
Yeah, but then light and dark doesn't do anything. Boxes in front of you don't necessarily do things. It's all over the place in terms of its stealth. You can't really game it, which is what you need to be able to do for it to be a comprehensible system to engage with. But many of the things you say do chime with me. I found the interchange to be a really exciting place. And the fact that you have this central place that you return to expand over time, that is a good rhythm. Going out into the overworld, as it were, and finding the things you need to unlock the dungeon is, and it's a Zelda format really in it, but it works extremely well. And the best moments in the interchange where you open up a whole new section in it, there's some sort of like crackling robotic PA woman saying, "You've now have access to the medical bay." And it was just, ooh, I can't wait. Something horrible's going to be in there. That's going to be exciting to find. I mean, part of that's my nostalgia for Prey, I think, and other immersive sims. But yeah, you can have a big fight in a garden center in this, which I don't think is something I've done in another game.
Yeah.
So that's good. But I don't know. I didn't really love the humor of it. It's very on the nose, chirpy, uber British satire. And I think part of it's just the mood I'm in at the moment, where that's not striking me as funny. But there's just a lot of, it's got the Wicker Man in it. And there are bandits who are druids, and there are bandits out there who wear policemen's hats. And there's a reference to The Last of the Summer Wine in there. And Jesus fucking Christ. I don't know. Now that's like a keep calm and carry on meme made into a game, and that rubbed me up the wrong way in a big way.
Yeah, I totally get you. Like, it's a game that has lots of influences that it doesn't necessarily do anything interesting with. So it's good to have John Wyndham, the novels of John Wyndham, or the Quatermass and the Pit, or any of those things as influences, because those are undercooked and underused as influences, particularly on that kind of. Was it though? Brian Aldiss used to criticize John Wyndham for, as he said, he was obsessed with the idea of cozy catastrophe, right? That's the reason Brian Aldiss, sci-fi writer, used to hate him. He would say, it's so fucking British to be like, sure, the Martians have landed and are besieging our towns and blinding us all, but we've still got enough jam to last us through, tea and cake and all that sort of stuff, which is very true. And this game has a fair bit of that in there. In fact, the whole game is cozy in a funny kind of way. But it doesn't really do anything with those influences to deepen them. There's nothing particularly new in here that I've discovered so far. And the game, the thing I was going to say after 4 hours of playing this game is that this game feels like a brilliant platform for something that it then doesn't quite deliver on. It doesn't give you that, like a version of this game that had the kind of same structures, but had kind of systems to deliver those sort of structures through gameplay would be really like something special. But those games are very hard to make, right? Those kind of stalker type games where you have a kind of immersive, reactive world, and then to have a whole bunch of stuff stacked on top of there. Like Fallout New Vegas is probably the closest anyone's come to properly delivering that. And like just in this day and age, that sort of thing is hard to do. So for me, like, yes, the world is slightly undercooked. Everything about it is almost slightly undercooked. But again, I just find myself very taken with it because I think, again, it's that momentum that it gives you that turns it into, that's the thing that makes it more than the sum of its parts, I think, is the kind of ping-pongingness of it, which I've just found a really attractive kind of proposition for whatever reason. And I hope they make a bunch more. I hope they make Atomfall 2 and they level up on a bunch of this stuff, because I actually think that what they've got cooking under the hood here is quite special. And I think if it speaks to a kind of smaller scale version of RPGs that kind of bring back a bit of that kind of questiness that we loved in Skyrim and games like it, there's been a little bit missing in this kind of era, perhaps. Oh, yeah. It avoids, I think I could sum it up like this. It avoids the issue of big town by having about a big town's amount of content in it spread across an entire game. That is the genius of it. That's how I would sum it up, basically, is that you never have the big town because it's the Lake District. And there are no big towns. The biggest town in the Lake District is Windermere, and it's fucking tiny. And it's not reflected in this game. So you're basically spreading this, the kind of what would normally be density to make you run scarpering for the fells across a landscape. And I think that is genius, yeah. Atom Ball, play it. I hope Rebellion make more games like this. I think they're good at it. Oh, and there was also a really good bit of like generative scariness where I was wandering around the intersection and I couldn't work out where the zombie man was. I'd unleashed a zombie man from one of the doors and he was running up some stairs behind me. And then I jumped down to a lower level and then I heard him snarl on another side of me. And I didn't realize where he was running at me from. And I was fucking terrified for the first time in a long time in a video game. I was really scared because that space, once you see it, it's so winding and strange. And there's all these doors to open and little rat runs to explore your way through that I was actually starting to get properly freaked out by just the space of it. It was very cool.
So it's on Game Pass.
It is.
So that's good. That's how I spent 10 minutes with it, but I was hit with the triple whammy of playing a character with amnesia, talking to an extremely boring person who then asked me to craft something. And that, so I just like hard, just alt F4'd out of it. And I was like, oh, I'll go back to it. I feel inspired to go back to it now, Jamie, now that you give me that endorsement. I'm willing to put up with bad stealth and even just cheat to get through those bits to experience. It sounds like it's just very atmospheric. Generally, it seems like well structured in terms of exploration and discovering things, and the exchange sounds really cool. So yeah, seems like
one thing I did do, and I wonder if this is may change my experience a little bit, is that I put there's like really, like a lot of games have now, and it's really good to see, like loads and loads of accessibility and difficulty options. You can really cater it to however you like. But it gives you the kind of different degradations at the beginning of difficulty. And I think I put survival on assist because I couldn't be fucked. I just guessed, as always with the difficulty settings, you've got no idea how they're actually going to play in the game. But I just guessed that I didn't want to spend loads of time like pilfering ingredient after ingredient and loads of resources on crafting and stuff like that. So I put that on assist, which basically means, and I checked just before we came on today, like that there's just more stuff around, right? And so the interchange is largely powered up by these kind of batteries. I had fucking tons of them. I've got 8 in my inventory and you only need 4 or whatever. And I think that might have made things a little bit more palatable for me as well, because I was like bumping into these like core plot items constantly. Like by the time the game was delivering them to me, I was like, I've got 4 of these already. You don't need to give me these. And that, I think, probably removed a layer of frustration that I might have otherwise had because they were just handing these things to me.
Do you ever get a bigger inventory?
I don't think you do. No, your inventory is really small.
Really small. And you need to craft a lot of stuff. So you rapidly run out of space.
Come on, Marsh. When you're fighting a militia of men in the woods and you would really like to be able to craft a Molotov cocktail, but in order to make space in your backpack, you have to eat some potatoes and a loaf of bread.
Yeah, it's the eternal quandary, isn't it?
And drop one of your 2 sickles in order to make space. Yeah, it's an interesting one. You really do have a tiny backpack in this game, which is not true of the Lake District. If you ever go to the Lake District, people are rocking some pretty sizable North Face backwear there. Atom Ball. It's on Game Pass. They should make more games like this. This is the sort of AA experience that the whole thing should be flooded with, I think. And it does seem to me that I haven't played Avowed yet, and there's that game that's just out today. I can't remember the name of it. I'm blanking on it. The sort of Southern Gothic one. South of Midnight, yeah, which I'm sure we'll talk about on a pod in the future. Like that kind of scale of games feels perfect to me for Xbox Game Pass, and I hope they continue to make games like that, because I know, Tom, you are the high priest of the 7 out of 10 AA game, and
I live for it.
You live for it, and I just think we can have a few more of those, then we'll just be happier. And there will be more opportunities in the industry for these AA studios to take that step into AAA and to not just be clustered around the big publishers and the big developers, I think.
It makes room for more ideas. Like, it just makes room for more people to explore different avenues for their games and different settings. So I think, like, the Lake District is a really cool setting. That's a really good idea for a Chernobyl-style horrible nuclear reactor disaster with the blue glow shooting up into the clouds as soon as you walk out the first few rooms. Yeah, that's a great first sentence of a story, isn't it?
I agree. It's great that a British team can think, we want to make Fallout Lake District.
Yeah.
And they go ahead and do it. And I really like it. It sold 1.5 million copies. Marsh doesn't like it, but we don't have to always listen to Marsh. And it's just really great that is a thing that can continue to happen. I know there's all sorts of issues with Microsoft and Game Pass and all that sort of stuff, but yeah, these are good things. I've been saying that for a while now, so I'm going to stop saying it, but yes.
Is Kingdom Come Deliverance 2, To King to Come, as it's obviously subtitled, is that a 7 out of 10, Tom? Kids want to know.
You know what? I'm going to push it up to an 8.
What? Wow. Yeah. Does that mean it's too good for you to enjoy?
Oh, that's a question I should ask my therapist. No, so Kingdom Come Deliverance, I have a huge spot for this game, this series. It's all right. Start from the beginning. It's a historical RPG set in the year 1401 or 2 or something in Bohemia in modern day, but today it's the Czech Republic. But then in the period it's set, it's basically Britain used to be where there's just loads of earls who own little bits of land and have their own militia. And there are kings battling above them and variously trying to get their loyalty to get their men at arms so that they can take over the countryside and then control the peasants in any given area. That is the kind of like top level political story of the game. Within that context, you play as a sort of spongy potato faced idiot who is the son of a blacksmith, which is the most cliched high fantasy origin ever, except you have no special qualities whatsoever.
Yeah. Are you not even brave?
No. There are like, one of the great things about this is that there are loads of social mechanics with like skill checks for speech and so you could try to pretend to be brave. And if you're dressed really well and you've had a wash recently, and you smell nice, they might believe you, perhaps, depending on who you're talking to. And there's actually quite a granular level of simulation to this. So washing yourself and being clean is actually quite an important social mechanic in the game of Kingdom Come Deliverance 2. And again, I mentioned earlier for Assassin's Creed, one of my favourite tooltips ever is, like, this is the socially acceptable way to reach the rooftop. My second favourite is from Kingdom Come Deliverance, where you basically can wash yourself in a trough of water. And there are troughs just around for the horses, but you can wash yourself in them. And it gives you a message that says that you're as clean as you're going to get washing in a trough. And the kind of passive-aggressive, backhanded insult. It's really judging you. But also, the characters of the game will also judge you. It's like, they will not give you the time of day if you rock up and you're covered in blood because you've murdered some peasants to steal their stuff. And yeah, if you rock up splattered in mess, you're not going to get served at the inn. They're going to turf you out. In fact, you might actually make people angry and they might actually start trying to fight you. There's actually a sort of social simulation happening in this game that is just not present in most RPGs.
Right, I don't think I've ever had the social pressure to have a sheep dip glow up in an RPG.
No, yeah, but that's just the start of why this is an 8 out of 10 instead of a 7 out of 10. I think it's just fundamentally what's great about it is that you're not important. Kashi, your story is not an important story. It matters to you because there's the revenge narrative. I won't go into detail, so I don't want to spoil anything. But hilariously, you're basically escorting a lord, a low level lord, and he's an idiot. He's a lovable idiot, and you're there to basically protect him, to guide him through very complicated negotiations that he's not equipped to deal with, and you are definitely not equipped to deal with. So you're just rocking up getting into a castle, talking to the local lord. And, like, they might just execute you. Like, they don't know you from Adam. You're trying to pass on a message from your lord, but you're basically just, you're unimportant. And what's amazing is that you have the opportunity when you're in these high-level discussions in the rooms, the beautiful rooms of the top of these palaces, to talk about your personal vengeance quest and say, really pushed forward. I saw this guy who I've sworn vengeance on, and like you can like just really aggressively put your case forward for why you deserve to kill him. And then the local lord would be like, I don't know who you are. I don't know who they are. I don't care about your what you're saying. Why are you talking? And in fact, the right move in perhaps like half of the conversations in the game is to not say anything.
Right.
It's just to shut the hell up and just know your place and muddle along and get out of the room, polish your armor, sell the stuff you've stolen, wash yourself in a trough, go to sleep, save the game, and then another day, and then maybe like tomorrow you might find a nice hat, and that would be the best thing that happens to you.
There's a really, there's a very instructive open in a moment in the opening where your band encounters another band and there's a sort of slight standoff, and it does give you that opportunity to speak up. I thought, all right, I'm going to fix this situation with my words, and you absolutely don't. The guy on the other side is, who the fuck are you? What are you talking? And your own boss is, shut the fuck up, you idiot. I've never felt quite as schooled.
It's so good. Like, it's really smartly written, because you're bailing, so the lord that you're escorting, like, you're bailing him out constantly. Like, you're really solving problems for him. Often, he doesn't even know how much you're doing. Keep him alive. And you have, there's a genuinely touching friendship there that is so carefully written and so consistent. I've played for 15 hours now, and like, it's so consistent that I think the writing in this game is really strong. Just simply for having a really strong concept of who the characters are and how they will consistently behave in different situations, and then if you say the wrong thing, they will behave understandably, like even if they curse you out. Or and there's also just a constant regional reputation system that's happening. The Telltale games, where you say something to a character and it says so and so, remember, that's happening all the time. So if you're selling stuff and it's stolen stuff and they find out, dents your reputation throughout the entire region. So it's like, that's a mechanical thing. Like, it's not just that you've picked the wrong conversation option, that you can all the time, and it's, the game almost baits you into saying the wrong thing a lot of the time, into saying the heroic thing when it's actually like a very stupid thing to say. And so you start to actually role play and be like, okay, I am just a nameless random son of a blacksmith from a town that's been obliterated and written up, is not on the map anymore. I don't have any standing, I don't have any money, I don't have any kind of like clout whatsoever. So you've got to play by your own wits. And that's a very exciting role-playing fantasy, I think. And you're not going to save the world. That's not even on the cards. You just want to get a nice house, get along with everyone, and be clean, and then get good at a trade and make some money. And I think it's very good for that, both the first game and the second game. And I'd recommend going back and playing the first one if you're interested in getting into the series.
Hmm.
Because it's basically the same. The simulation is less developed in the first one, but it has the same sense of humour and the same sense of mundanity like that persists in the second game. Second game is more confident. I think it's much bigger, but it's what's there. They're both really good, fun sandbox games in their own right. I think Skyrim with no magic, and you're not the Dovahkiin. You're just a bloke.
Famously, you can go off and just go completely off-piste and do whatever you like in this game and just pursue a life as, I don't know, a fishmonger or whatever. Is that worthwhile doing? What is the value of doing that versus pursuing what is quite an entrancing plot, I think?
Yeah, I wouldn't just go off and live in a field, but you do need money and you do need stuff. And actually, the game's got a really strong economy, by which I mean money matters, the stuff you have matters, the stuff you choose to carry or not carry, the stuff you choose to sell and fence, all of that stuff matters. So many RPGs get this wrong, where money's scarce for the first 10 hours, and then you have all the money you could ever need for the rest of the game, and it doesn't matter anymore. Whereas actually eking out an existence matters more in this game because of the scarcity. And like, the quickest way to make money is to do crime and to hurt people and steal from people.
Just like real life.
And that's a choice you have to make. Yeah, so I stole some lovely gold goblets from a church Les Mis style. And
did the priest let you go, like in Les Mis? Go ahead.
Oh, no, if he came at me, I would have clobbered him with a truncheon, which is not how it went in Les Mis. But, so I cannot be redeemed, unlike the Les Mis situation. But yeah, the thing is about that, though, I still have them in my inventory because I have not found a fence for them yet. They're worth like thousands of gold, but I need to find someone in the world I can actually sell them to.
That's the problem with stealing from cathedrals, isn't it?
It's just so hard.
Where
to
else did you get these like glorious golden goblets in the year 1403 or whatever you are?
But that's what I mean. Like the fact I'm thinking about that, and that's a consideration. I think it speaks to its credit. Like, is that it feels like a world in that sense. It's that there's an actual economy happening, and though I can't just go to the local pub and flog these cathedral goblets, I'm going to have to find a serious criminal somewhere.
Just some kind of Satanist who doesn't care about stealing from God.
Exactly. And then, or some way to melt it down so it just turns, I don't know.
You should be able to do it yourself.
Yeah.
It does sound very appropriately medieval. Marsh, I know you're the history buff, but I've been listening to a few podcasts about just medieval times. And like that discrepancy between the idea of the chivalric code and knights being some kind of system of order, when what they really were was guys on horses in armor who could ride very fast into villages and murder everyone and then quickly build a castle. I didn't realize that like castles were, that was their essential like first kind of origin, was that like you could build them on hills in the middle of areas and then use them to fuck up the surrounding countryside. And so the idea of you could try and be glorious in this game, but you'll just get kicked into the mud and someone will piss on your head. It does feel, I don't know, appropriately medieval, or at least if not accurately, it feels kicking against the idea of the kind of the glory of knights and all that kind of bollocks.
Yeah, it's definitely not Arthurian.
No.
Fantastic castles though. And you're right, Jamie, that castles are a huge, obviously just regional sorts of influence, but it's really worth following the story. I think I would recommend that if you play the game, do read the journal entries, because you need the kind of historical background to what's going on. Otherwise, the power struggles will not make sense. And once I'd actually read, you know, King Wenceslas is in prison somewhere, and the King Sigismund is trying to expand his influence. You need to know who they are and why the local lords are battling to like for one's favor or the other. And in fact, you can get into fights in pubs if you say the wrong thing. So if you declare your love for King Wenceslas, then yeah, you can end up in fist fights and stuff, which is can be beneficial if you're good at fist fighting. But the combat system is super sluggish and weird.
It was too hard for me. I think this is why I quit the game, actually, is because I'll make this game easy for myself by specking myself as being good at combat, because then at least maybe I won't have to do all the sort of grinding other career stuff if I can just stab people. But it turns out the combat system is too complicated and I couldn't stab people either. So I basically specced myself into a hole. And so I probably have to restart if I want to play it again. But
yeah, the combat is... Unfortunately, it's mandatory. There's more and more combat as the game goes on. And there are some, just, I say boss fights, that suggests you're fighting a dragon or something. It's just you versus another bloke. But you do need to be able to get through those to progress the story. And the story is well worth progressing. Really good characters, really worth sticking with. But it's a very strange system. So it's all in first person. And I'm playing on PS5. So you're using a stick to change the position of your sword above, right, left, or below. And then you can block in that direction or strike in that direction. There are combos and things. It has really poor feedback for when you land a hit or when you've done something right or wrong. It's very flappy wanging of arms around the place and you're not sure if you've actually collided or done any damage or whatever. I find it to be like really imprecise and annoying. I've unlocked a couple of combos.
That's a shame, isn't it? Because like a game like Chivalry 2, it has brilliant feedback in, if you're playing with a mouse in that game, the feedback against swords clanging off each other and stuff like that. They do it really well. They have to break immersion a little bit and have a couple of little flashy things that happen to tell you what's going on. But like, right, the initiative system in that game is just quietly fucking genius in Chivalry 2. Like the amount of stuff that's going on under the hood and how that transfers into play. And it's a shame that they haven't got something as good in Kingdom Come Deliverance 2.
Yeah, I wish that like modders would come in and change it, but it's almost too, it like it needs redoing from the ground up to be satisfying. The thing is, I don't mind if a big splashy blue spark happens when I perfect counter. I don't mind those kind of contrivances. Just I'd rather know what's going on in the combat.
Chivalry 2 will literally tell you that you just did a riposte, you just did a drag, you just did an excel. It's really useful for working out how the fuck to kill people.
It's really interesting to see where the kind of dividing line between what is sufficiently simulatory for the devs. Like, they have an idea of what reality is and what things for them accurately represent it. But it's not consistent. There's plenty of very gamey things in that game. But clearly that's invisible to them. And the things that they have doubled down on being, inverted commas, realistic on, don't necessarily feel realistic to me. Because clearly that the way that they've set up combat in there is out of a desire for simulation, like a very granular simulation. But to me, it feels completely alien to holding a thing. So it's, if it hasn't managed to conjure in me the feeling of holding something, then something's gone wrong with it. But not for them.
And you've run out of stamina immediately in the early phases. I'm not like a particularly buff or strong person, but I could swing a sword more than four times before having to have a 30-second rest. Like, it gets quite silly, particularly, like, the save system is really weird. You have to drink the craft and drink peach schnapps to save in the game. But what everyone actually does is they use the save and quit function and then reload the game. Mm. And that actually gives you a quick save. And the developers just refuse to put a quick save in. It's just, like... what end?
I'm pretty sure save and quit is mentioned in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, though. So
I remember
either that or the Venerable Bede.
That phase of the Edda.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Save and quit. It's interesting, isn't it? Because it does seem like a sort of inversion of what Atomfall's doing, right? Because they could have made a game, they could have easily made Kingdom Come Deliverance 2 much more accessible and much more easy, quote-unquote, right? They could have made a much more poppy version of this game, and it probably would have done really well. There's been plenty of games which in the sequels have smoothed off the rough edges of the original to great effect, right? But it does seem like they haven't done that at all. They've actually leaned deeper into what makes them weird and what makes them unique. And yeah, the whole realism thing is obviously ridiculous because it's one of those things, if you think about it for more than a couple of seconds, this isn't realism, this is just what you think. Like, it's just you, a man in 21st century culture, doing a guess on things. Stop calling it realism. But it does seem like they've really leaned into the weirdness and leaned into their own kind of freaky ideas. And again, that is in a similar way that Rebellion, making something clearly with its focus on being producible and survivable in today's brutal markets, very much like the brutal medieval markets. It seems like these guys have gone the opposite way and thought, let's just go for broke on our own kind of crazy vibes and our own weirdness. And it sounds, again, it sounds like that was also a really good success for them. So it's nice to see. Oh, it's good to see a game that doesn't always take the easy route. And by all accounts, I haven't actually seen this game up and running yet at all, but by all accounts, it's also very beautiful as well, and the kind of gorgeous world to spend time in.
Yeah, it's very peaceful in its best moments, where you're just wandering slowly through meadows, basically, and then a gentle rain will fall. And it's very nice in that respect. Yeah, you're right, though, Jamie. Like, they've completely committed to what made the first people liked about the first game. And that was their mission for the first game anyway. Like, they're just carrying on down that path. I think what I find faintly irritating about the kind of the stance of that this is historically accurate is that the more I think, I disagree with that, because actually what I think they're doing from a design perspective is deliberately introducing friction where they want friction to happen in the game. But they're basically introducing problems that they want you to surmount by engaging with the systems. And instead of saying, oh, this is what it would have been like to clobber someone around the head with a sword in the 1400s, actually just saying, you need to get better at this particular skill for this game in order, and just being more, maybe, don't say the wrong thing, just be clearer about the mechanics and not claiming that it's historical accuracy, but actually just saying, it's more fun to play this way, and this is what you need to get good.
No, I think you've convinced me to play it. I think I am going to give that a whirl. Have we open-worlded all the open worlds that we can open-world at this point in time?
I believe we have. I think we can now close them.
Excellent. Thanks very much for listening to Great and Crowbar. You can hang out with us and our lovely community on our Discord, a link to which you can find on our website at crateandcrowbar.com, where you can also find all the episodes here. If you have a question for us, we're going to bring back questions, send it to the question subchannel on Discord, or you can email it to us at questions@crateandcrowbar.com. We're on YouTube at youtube.com/crateandcrowbar. Subscribe to us there. And we're also very kindly funded by our Patreon backers. If you'd like to know more about supporting our podcast and its spin-offs, it's patreon.com/crateandcrowbar. I definitely recorded this outro on the night with Marsh and Chris with me, and not the next morning because I couldn't get my shit together to speak like a human being. Although, if I was recording the next morning, I could say that I have now finished Atomfall, and I think it's really great. I really do. It's got a great ending, and even though I was sort of slagging it a little bit, I feel a bit bad about that because I honestly do think it's great. Anyway, I should stop talking about Atomfall forever now. Thanks for listening, everybody. Ta-ta.